Welcome to Northern Latitudes. I'm Bill Alt. Today, two guests to talk about the recently released film, Wildflowers. Wildflowers is a documentary film that blends history and backcountry adventure to explore the legacy of famed early 20th century Rockies explorer, Mary Schaefer Warren. Directed by filmmaker Trixie Paxis, Wildflowers, an all-female creative team led by mountain writer Megan J. Ward, embarks on an extraordinary journey that retraces Warren's 1908 expedition to Maligne Lake in Jasper National Park.
My name is Trixie Paxis, and I'm an emerging filmmaker based in Kimberley, British Columbia. I am drawn to stories that feature unheard voices or different twists on mountain stories.
My name is Megan Ward. I am a mountain writer and adventurer based in Banff, Alberta. And for a long time now, I've been in the pursuit of adventure and great stories and enjoy publishing in all its forms. And more recently, have delved into the world of filmmaking.
And Megan, you and I have chatted before. So we're going to start with Trixie. Trixie, where did the concept for this whole project come from?
Technically, the concept first formed, or at least early iterations of the concept were first formed at the Banff Center Adventure Filmmakers Workshop in 2020. As you recall, it was an interesting time. And I participated in this workshop because I was supported with a grant from Paul Ziska Photography. So Paul and Megan were employers of mine, and they encouraged me to kind of pursue this aspect of filmmaking and suggested this workshop that I'd never heard of. And it was as part of this workshop, I had to pitch an idea in the room. But I think before that, it was really moving to the Rockies and discovering that there were female adventurers who were doing these incredible things in the early 1900s. Having grown up in Vancouver, I was completely unaware of that. And so for me, this concept came from a desire to bring that story further afield. Because I know Mary's quite well known in Banff, but she's not so well known beyond the Rockies.
That was one point I was going to bring up. This is very much a regional story. You go to Banff as a visitor, which I do fairly regularly, and you see the Mary Schaefer, you know, kind of sights and sounds around you. And you know, if you're paying attention to any kind of historical thing, you end up there. Megan, what intrigued you about Mary Schaefer the most to get started on this?
I first encountered Mary's story back in 2005 when I first moved to the Rockies. Like Trixie, I didn't grow up there. I grew up in Ottawa, actually, and had never heard about Mary Schaefer Warren. And so when you hear her story and the amazing things she accomplished in the early 20th century when women just were not doing the kinds of things that she was doing, it's hard not to really be drawn in. And from there, the more you pull on Mary's story, the more you discover, and she's just so unconventional, so remarkable. I really feel like she was a woman who was ahead of her times. So I just enjoyed tracking her story for the last 17, 18 years. And when Trixie and I, we were off on a hike one day, and she told me about what she'd pitched to the Banff Center Adventure Filmmakers Workshop. And we kind of laugh about this now, but I think at the time I kind of rolled my eyes about Mary Schaefer because she is so well known in the Rockies. But then we both agreed that further afield, her story is very unknown, and we think it needs to be told to a wider audience.
It is very unknown. It's incredible how little is known. And I mean, it's not just Mary, but there's other stories as well, obviously. But she really did have such an enormous impact on the area, and, you know, and obviously the women's side of being an adventurer in a time when that just wasn't the norm. What else made her special? Like, why, you know, do you have any insight to why she decided to take this path?
When you read her letters in the archives at the White Museum, you can get a strong sense that she went into the wilderness to heal. And it does touch on it in her book, Old Indian Trails. In some of the quotes that she shares that resonated with us, but she had lost her husband, Charles Schaefer, and her parents in the same year. And it is immediately after that that she started delving deeper and deeper into the backcountry. At first, it was to finish Charles Schaefer's book, Alpine Flora of the Canadian Rockies. But even after finishing the book, she was searching for something. And that's where her famous Hunter of Peace quote comes in, where she talks about, they like to say explorer of me, but no, only a hunter of peace, I found it. And so to us, you know, we could relate to having to process things or deal with things in our own lives, but often delving into the backcountry and finding some solace, different understanding, or a different perspective when we can shut out the noise and be alone with our thoughts. And I think, you know, whether it's Mary Schaefer 100 and something years ago or us today, we can connect over that shared experience.
And Megan, you have a direct or indirect connection as well, since you were a writer as well. How much about the writing process, or has it influenced you as you've moved ahead from your book now?
Yeah, I think storytelling was a really big piece of Mary's life. She really felt compelled to share about her experiences, and she was so talented. She did it through writing, through her book, which came into the world with rave reviews, including one in the New York Times. She was a very skilled artist and watercolorist. She also had an incredible knack for photography, and she actually hand-tinted a variety, like hundreds of her slides. They were taken in black and white, but she had them printed on glass plates or made on glass plates, which she painstakingly painted. And so I think that's something that I can really relate to. Not only this desire to live these experiences, but also to share them with others. And there's this interesting through line through her publications, where in Old Indian Trails, she writes about inviting people into the experience of the wilderness and everything it has to offer. And in her later publications, some of which went unpublished, she's lamenting the fact that now people are coming to her beloved Rockies, and like little did she know what it would become in the 21st century. So I can relate to her as a creator. So she just loved going on the road with her slideshows and her lantern slides. She sent them overseas during the war with corresponding stories. I think she understood what I think everyone here on this podcast right now understands about storytelling and the power it has in our lives.
And where did the title from the film come from?
Wildflower is the title of her film, comes from a Mary Schaefer quote. She said, "Nature meant us all to be wildflowers instead of houseplants," which is a quote that I love. But since coming up with the title, it's also had deeper meanings for us. I see the women featured in the film as wildflowers. You know, they're beautiful, but they're also quite rugged and quite resilient. And something that we noticed leading up to our premiere is that you never see wildflowers blooming alone. And that's exactly what the process of making this film has been like. It's taken a village, and our wildflowers are more like a meadow of wildflowers.
What are the challenges, Trixie, of making a film like this?
I think that in general, there are some challenges to making your first film. It's hard in this landscape to get enough funding to do a great job. And making a film, it just costs money. And it's hard to get people to back you in your first film when you don't have a proof of concept or something to show for it. So there's an immediate hurdle to making a film, especially if you have a certain vision for it and you want to do it a certain way. And then in telling this story in particular, there were quite a few hurdles once we did get going. For instance, we experienced delays in production just getting the permits to camp, I mean, not even the film permits, but just the permits to camp in the Moline River Valley, which is along the Great Divide Trail, took 8 people logging on, and it was a Hail Mary moment. You know, we didn't know if the film would come to be as we had envisioned it, except for that we got extremely lucky and someone managed to snag 5 consecutive bookings in the places that we wanted to go. So there were logistical hurdles like that. And then, of course, there were a lot of unexpected things that happened in the process of making the film that threw us for a loop. So it really requires you to be determined and to persevere into the unknown, much like Mary did when she was horsepacking.
And one of those hurdles was the loss of our good friend. And Megan, you mentioned it earlier about the plates and the coloring and everything else. And part of the film was to recreate some of those images or try to. Can you tell me a little bit about Miss Gillis and what her influence was on the entire film?
Mm-hmm. When it came to putting together our team that went on the Moline River Valley expedition together, we did have some criteria that we needed to fulfill. This included having a team of women. We really desired to do the expedition as an all-woman team. This is largely inspired by Mary's choice to travel with a single female companion in addition to her guides. In our case, we were backpacking, not on horseback, and we were carrying all of our own gear, and we needed women who knew what they were doing. We need women who, for whom it wasn't their first time putting on a backpack, considering we also had to film along the way. And we really wanted to bring along somebody who was a photographer, because we wanted to both capture the experience of doing the trek through photography, as well as recreate, I think we did 6 of Mary's, we recreated 6 of Mary's lantern slides, which we handpicked a few from along the Icefields Parkway, and then the rest along the trail and on Moline Lake itself. And as chance would have it, in a way, Natalie Gillis was in between jobs, and she worked as a pilot. And so either she was on working, like 3 weeks on, usually off the grid, not even on her texts, or she was available and she would take that time to go on adventures. She was in the process of biking across Canada in several legs, and it worked out for her to come along on the truck with us. We didn't know at the time just how significant that would be. Natalie created those images for us. We have this beautiful collection that she created for the film, as well as the repeat photography. And then during our editing process, back in June, Natalie was working as a pilot when her plane went down near Albany, New York. They're still investigating what happened in that accident, but she was alone in the plane as the pilot. It was just a shock. She had just finished all of her required flying time to receive her commercial jet pilot's license. And she was highly skilled, highly trained, very passionate. And it came as just a huge blow to her group of friends, which we both, Trixie and I, considered her to be a dear friend. And in addition to that, we were literally in the middle of finishing the edits on the film. And so this presented some new challenges, but also some new opportunities with what Wildflowers became.
Yeah, and that's obviously something that you just cannot expect or, even understand. How do you pick yourself up? Because, I mean, you're watching, especially, Trixie, this is a question for you especially, because I know you're handling film, and, I mean, you can tell I'm old. You're editing, you're watching the same footage over and over and over again, and you're cutting things, and you're seeing this person that meant so much to the project and yourselves, and suddenly she's gone. And you mentioned about us, and we all do it. We've all used hiking as a source of healing or just getting out into nature. And how much of a role does that play? Is it even more important to you now?
Most definitely. And I'm actually very much looking forward to getting some time outside once the whirlwind of finishing this film and releasing it into the world dies down. I think my soul needs that. But with Natalie, we were in the final week that I had with our editor, Anundi Brownstein, in Vancouver. We were editing this remotely, so that time together in person was very valuable from an editing perspective, and I didn't quite know how valuable it would be for us to be together, because we got the news about Natalie in that final stretch of editing together in person. And when we actually kind of overcame that hurdle and sat down and got back into the edit and kind of shook the mouse and woke up the computer, it was Nat's face and Nat on Mount Unwin that was on the screen. And it was, for me, the hardest moment in the whole process. But it was wonderful to be beside somebody who also got to know Nat and Nat's spirit on the trail. Anundi was our cinematographer and got to spend that time with her. And yeah, for us, it was a real opportunity to share Nat's spirit. And actually, the sequence that we had edited before we found out about Nat is what you see in the film today. She was being her true, authentic self, and we didn't have to change or edit a thing before releasing the film. We really have a genuine time capsule of who she was and what she represents. And so we're just really, yeah, feel really fortunate that we can keep her light shining in our own little way.
It was very, I watched the film, and as I watched it, it was very poignant. And I was thinking, like, I wonder if that was how far along in the process they were when that particular section of the film was shot, because it's very, if you know what's happened, and a lot of people watching won't, but I mean, and good on you guys for being able to pull through and, you know, accomplish and finish what you've done. Part of which was an amazing debut this past weekend at the Banff Film Festival. So tell me about that, because that sounded like it was amazing. Megan, that's you.
Okay. And it was also just so interesting because as a producer, I was also part of the post-production process, but I wasn't in the editing room with Anundi and Trixie during that week. I was traveling in Ontario and Quebec at the time. And that sequence that Trixie was describing on Mount Unwin, I believe it was picture locked. Yeah, it was good to go. It was in the film almost as it ended up in the final version. And there's just something, I don't even have the words to describe what it's like to watch that sequence over and over and over again. It's like, no matter how many times I've seen it, it makes the words, it's like words that were never more true just became even truer for all of us about not wasting a moment on this planet. So I just wanted to add that before we jump into the premiere.
No, and you know what? And I'll speak a little bit to this too, because it is such a poignant moment, because what happens is she climbs a mountain, she bushwhacks a trail up to this point to try and recreate one of these images. And she's talking about it, and it's, her words alone are enough to make you stop. But then the image itself, when she recreates the image, and, you know, as a photographer, you know, she's lining up the shot and she's talking about moving 30 feet this way, and she's pointing down a little bit, and she's kind of moving around to try and find the exact image. And it's just, it hit me as a photographer as well, because it's like, yeah, she's looking for this exact thing. She knows it's there, but she's got to find it. And she does. And what she says is just so, it just hits, because, like I said, because we know, and I didn't know her well. Like I said, we had one conversation by an email trying to set something up, but I did read her book of poems before that. And it was like, it's an amazing, it's so poignant in that little piece of the film. It's like, it's how hard it hits.
It's almost prophetic. She's recreating, Natalie was recreating an image shot by Sid Unwin, who was a cook and a guide on the expedition. And throughout the research process, Megan and I always had a soft spot for Sid. He was such a force of nature from what we read. And it was sad to us that shortly after this amazing experience in the wilderness with Mary and the crew, he went off to fight in World War I and he didn't make it back.
Right.
And so that was already tugging at our heartstrings, and we had no idea that we would experience the same kind of loss, you know, within our own crew.
Yeah, it's funny. It's
parallels are uncanny.
And it's amazing. Like, even the story, and I'm sorry, we're getting off track from the debut, but the parallels for Mary Schaefer and you two and Megan, you as a writer and everything else, I find it so fascinating. It's just like, wow, the stars have really aligned here. So now, speaking of stars, let's get to the debut on the film festival, because how well did it go from your point of view?
It was an incredible experience. And one other cool kind of factoid that ties into the film is Mary's historic home and her final resting place are, as we say, literally a stone's throw from the theater where the film premiered. But I also used to live in the house across the street from hers. So it was another Mary tie-in for me, that for 3 years I lived across the street from Mary Schaefer Warren's house and from her final resting place in the Banff Cemetery. And so between the Adventure Filmmakers Workshop coming full circle, my home in Banff, it was Mary's adopted home for the last part of her life. And then the Banff Mountain Film Festival is just, I mean, one of the most prestigious outdoor film festivals in the world. Like, we knew when we submitted that there might be a chance we wouldn't make the cut. And we did. We were just so thrilled and so honored. And we had people from our team who came in from across the country. Natalie Gillis's family was able to attend and experience that premiere with us. We just felt the energy and emotion in that room. Like, for me as a creative, I have nothing that compares. How about you, Trixie?
There's absolutely nothing I can think of that compares to being able to share something you've poured your heart and soul into with a room full of people and seeing that it's sparking emotion and hopefully inspiration in them. That's the absolute biggest reward. And it was really special to share that with a room full of people in Banff.
And next up is, I'm forgetting the name of the film festival in England. Where are you going next there, Trixie? Bail me out.
Kendall, in the Lake District, Kendall Mountain Festival.
Talk a little bit about that process of, I mean, Banff, we know, well, outdoor people in Canada, most people know about the Banff Film Festival in Canada. It's a pretty well-known branding. Tell me how the process is to get involved with something like that and all these other ones that you're obviously going to try and get into. How hard is it? Just so people understand.
I mean, the answer to that question is something that we're still in the process of discovering, but getting into festivals like this is such a great opportunity to not only have your work shown to a captive audience, but also to network and build connections and relationships that hopefully help you tell more stories down the road. And so the technical process for getting into these festivals is quite straightforward. There's a website called Film Freeway that has a lot of the major festivals on it, and you create a profile describing your film and you submit to these festivals that all have juries and make film selections based on their own unique programming requirements. There's never a guarantee and you never know what's going to come of it. But fortunately for us, we've been accepted into a handful of festivals that we were really hoping to get into. Kendall Mountain Festival is one of them. We have a screening at the Sudbury Outdoor Adventure Festival coming up. So we got into the Whistler Film Festival, and it, you know, feels like this film is starting to take on a life of its own in a way. Yeah, it feels quite surreal at the moment.
Okay, where do we go next? What happens next after all this? Megan, what are you up to?
Well, I also just want to add that I think what was so special about the premiere was the opportunity to, of course, show it to a live audience. But I think when you create something and you've worked on it for so long, you almost start to lose sight of the fact that you've created it for an audience or a reader, in my case, with my usual kind of outputting is through books. So you kind of lose sight of the fact that you've created something for others. And at this point now, I feel like we've just started the journey. And now the audience is going to complete that story, that they're going to take the film and its themes and its conversations, and they're going to bring that around their dinner tables and with their friends and when they go out for drinks after seeing it. So that's kind of like what's next in terms of, you know, for me with the film. We can talk about other projects if you like, as I know creatives always have something on the go. But yeah, I think it's just a really cool part of the journey that I have to reiterate, when you're in it, you really can lose sight of it sometimes when you're in the kind of a long process.
How do you think this film in this, I don't want to call it political climate, but the climate that we're in right now when it comes to women's rights and women's, the challenges that seem to be coming back for the rights and freedoms of women, what do you think the message comes out of this film?
Especially with everything that's going on in the world, I hope that this film inspires women to be wildflowers, to be a little bit rough and tough when they have to, and to not necessarily be quiet. And I hope that we inspire people by, you know, sparking some questions in the film, but also by walking the walk. You know, earlier Meg talked about an all-female crew on the expedition. We had a lot of women in key creative roles behind the scenes as well. And it's back to the quote about wildflowers, they don't bloom alone, and you have to help each other bloom and support each other now more than ever. I also hope that the film can not just inspire people, but provide a little bit of comfort in a challenging moment. And, you know, just before jumping onto this podcast, we saw an Instagram story from a woman who posted a video of our film on their TV screen at home, watching it through the Banff online portal. And the caption was just saying how she needed this today. And so even something that simple, I'm really, really glad that we could do that for one person.
Very nice. The film's called Wildflowers. I can't recommend it enough. It's really well done. It's well done, and there's such a power to the story on so many different levels. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks, Bill.
Wildflowers will make its British Columbia debut on December 7th at the Whistler Film Festival, after its recent debut in the UK at the Kendall Mountain Festival. Check out wildflowersfilm.ca for all the up-to-date listings for showings. Trixie and Megan both graciously spoke about the loss of their friend Natalie Gillis. I'd hoped to have Natalie on the podcast at some point, but it was not meant to be. Natalie was a talented photographer, pilot, and writer, and released a book of poems, This Is Where Atlantis Sank, a reflection on a photography trip to Antarctica. This is a short poem by Natalie called Orion. If the Earth is flat, do drifting icebergs escape the peninsula, sail into the night skies, and onto distant skyscapes? Or do they crash into the melancholy moon or melt into the blistering sun? Or does Orion collect them in his belt somewhere between Hydrus and Taurus, pondering each one by one by one, before quitting them to the night, the endless darkness of night? This Is Where Atlantis Sank was published by Northland Publishing House in Calgary. That's it for this episode. Thanks to Trixie and Megan for joining me. For more information about Wildflowers and each of our guests, be sure to check out the links in the show notes. Thank you for tuning in to Northern Latitudes. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform to stay updated on future episodes. For even more content, including all the Northern Latitudes podcasts, my photography, and Northern Latitudes events, go to northernlatitudes.ca. Theme music and sound logo produced by John Sanfilippo at Soundwise in Kingston, Ontario. Closing music is called Wildflower Waltz by Cody Martin. To leave a comment or suggestion, email me at podcast@northernlatitudes.ca. Until next time, I'm Bill Ault. Find your way to Northern Latitudes.